podcast with Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. My name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Welcome to the show, everybody. This is season 4, episode 11, episode number 146. Mayday, bitches. What's up?
Mayday, bitches.
What? Yes.
That was kind of awesome. I'm not going to lie. I was super excited when she was like, is this Mayday? And, you know, I was like, ooh, chills.
All comes back around. Y'all thought about Mayday.
Mm-mm. Yeah.
Good time. Yes, it does.
Yeah. Anyway, in case you haven't figured it out, this is our Handmaid's Tale episode dedicated to that. And we are excited.
Season three.
We are excited to talk about this. I watched this whole show in like the whole season in like 4 days.
That's amazing.
How do you feel about that?
How do you just feel about society, your life? How are you sleeping?
I'm better. I'm good. I mean, God, compared to season two, this is like nothing.
Yes.
Which I would assume is why this season had somewhat of a more of a tally marks in the win category than last season, which was just let me slip my wrists at the end of every episode. But I have, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 pages of notes. Don't worry, we won't be reading them.
Holy shit! Nice. I have 0 pages of notes, guys. going off the top of the old noggin.
Yeah.
You know, I had meant to. My preparation was going to be that in the outline I would post the name of every episode in the season.
I certainly
did not do that.
So. I gotcha. I did that. Don't worry.
In the outline?
No, not in the outline. In my notes. So.
That only I have. So screw you. Sisterhood is dead.
Well, you know what? Whatever, guys. I know what we're talking about. Before we continue, though, let's. If you'd like to hear our previous episodes where we talked about season 1 and season 2 of The Handmaid's Tale, you can go to episode 2.4, which was called Mayday Bitches. It was released on July 17th, 2017. Or you can go to episode 3.12, which was released on September 21st, 2018, and that's called Say My Name. And that's if you're. You want to go back and hear what we had to say about that.
I would love to hear what we had to say about season 2, because I do not remember what we said.
As I said several times, it put me in a dark place. So
it was rough. But what I really appreciate is that now that we've seen season 3, I see a lot of what season 2 was setting up. And there were a lot of, you know, a lot of swings and a lot of payoff,
at least, yeah.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of really satisfying moments in season 3 that were thanks to season 2. And it made all of, you know, the difficult season 2 stuff.
Right. Were they thanks to season 2 or were they thanks to all of the critics of season 2?
I don't know. I mean, I don't really, like, I'm never sort of up to date on what anyone else is saying about them. So I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, for example, season 3, I don't know if it was well received. I liked it.
Yeah.
I don't know what, like, the general viewership thought, though.
I don't know what the general public,
like, I don't know.
Well, I finished it yesterday, so I skimmed through some articles tonight. But we can get into that a little bit later, because there were some points in some, like, season wrap-up articles that I read that I did agree with, and there were some that I didn't agree with. But we can talk about that. Overall, everybody's a thumbs up on it.
Totally
thumbs up.
Yeah, me too. Like I said, I really enjoyed it. I wish that if I had known that I was going to like it, I might have suggested us doing a weekly podcast on it.
Oh,
a la Broad Little Lies, but I didn't, so we didn't, so here we are.
Well,
you know what? And that's going to be a question. Like, is there going to be a season 4?
Yes,
does there need to be a season 4?
There's a season 4. They are confirmed for like, season 4.
Because the season 4, what's it going to be? Like, a whole season of, like the denouement, if you will?
Actually.
No, you first, then me.
Me?
Yes, me? You first. Oh. Colleen.
I honestly, I had brought this up to talk about, like, what could next season be. I was thinking about this while we were watching it. I would love to see a season that really focused on life after Gilead for some of those people, because I mm-hmm. genuinely was into seeing the storyline of Emily, and I loved, you know, seeing a little bit more of like how Moira was affected, and I would love to see.
I'm there for it, but
I wouldn't be surprised if the handmaids and the Marthas that, you know, sacrificed themselves didn't end up going back to households, and maybe we didn't really see, you know, the more traditional like ceremonies and stuff. Like maybe they found a place to like hide out underground, or I don't know. But we could talk, I guess, more about that if you want to later. But Amanda, what were you thinking?
Well, and sort of thinking along in your guys' thinking, and again, we might want to push this to later, but I came across an article in the Hollywood Reporter that kind of talked about this, that kind of just blew my brain apart in terms of like where a possible season four could go. So I'll start, and then if we want to like move this to later, I can say it all again. But basically, and this came from an interview with the showrunner, Bruce Miller. As far as Gilead is concerned, those children are legally under the law, and those children are the children that you know they escape out into Canada. They're in someone else's family. They have parents. For their point of view, you've just taken adopted children and flown them out of the country, and some of them aren't from people out of the country, i.e., you know, the handmaids and their parents. Some of them, their parents are still back in Gilead, a lot of them. So you didn't even take them to their parents. You just took them to random other countries. So I think that Gilead, from their point of view, under their set of codes, is going to be ready to go to war over this. I would.
Oh. Yes.
They were ready to go to war over one child. And he continues, and this is something that really blew my brain apart and was something I really hadn't thought about. If the way they treat their citizens didn't already make it clear, Gilead's staggering military capabilities should punctuate the point outright war with this nation is not advised. They have the exact same number, I believe it's 3,200 nuclear weapons, that we do, Miller says about Gilead's military. They took over America, so they have every nasty helicopter, every fighter plane, they have it all. They have the biggest military in the world, which is very, very important in all the discussions that people have about how to deal with them. They have this giant, powerful military that they can wield anywhere around the world. I think our country has 8 aircraft carriers, and no other country has more than 2. So we're kind of leaps and bounds exponentially more powerful. I think that here at this moment of triumph, but I don't know what shit show it's going to lead to.
Right.
So I think that takes the show in a completely crazy new direction for season 4.
Maybe that's how we see more of Nick too.
Right. And they did, the article does go on to talk more about that Nick's coming back, and there's still, which for me was something that was like super unresolved and something that like, I need to know Nick's backstory now. Like it felt so abrupt and so quick that he just kind of exits stage left that like, I'm glad that they've kind of set up that like he is coming back and he will have a presence in season 4.
Yeah. So the children thing, is it you're taking, yes. So a lot of their handmaids, their Marthas, you know, their handmaids, I'm sorry, their mothers who were handmaids, their Marthas that took care of them, like they are all, they're out there alone, these children. And yes, it's better for them to not be in Gilead anymore. But we saw this entire season with Hannah, we were drilled again and again and again, like she's happy now. She barely remembered June when she saw her, which is heartbreaking. But like, is it doing more mental and emotional damage to her to rip her apart from this, you know, privileged life that most of these women are current little girls, I'm sorry, most of these little girls are currently leading, versus, you know, freeing and taking them away from any chance for reconciliation with their parents in the foreseeable future, versus like, you know, is the psychological damage worth it? No, of course.
Well, sure, but they can wear anything they want now.
and they can read.
Right. Well,
yeah. Now the clothing thing was kind of like, well, I mean, I think purposefully childish, but I think yeah, like they can read.
Yeah.
And not read. Become a they baby can, factory.
But they can marry who they want.
Right.
They don't have to be raped by some old man because they're married off to an old dude when they're 14.
Exactly. Oh, and like you said with the clothing thing, it was purposefully childish, but it was also, she's a tween girl. Of course, that's how she's going to relate to the world is, can I wear what I want to?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, she's not going to be like, do I not have to, like, you know, get raped by somebody? Because she might not even know that that's what's coming. And don't forget the indoctrination, like Nick's wife last season was so like, and the little girl outside the hospital was, they were so like, this is our duty. This is what we want to do. So, and I wondered if that scene outside the hospital was thrown in A, to motivate June to get them out of there, and B, to kind of create that like dissonance in our minds. Like,
right. Right. I mean, it's like if you are on a steady diet of Fox News, eventually like, it changes.
You start to drink the Kool-Aid.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point. All right. Well, any further argument I have is done. All you have to do is say, but it happens with Fox News. And I'm like, okay, you're right. Yeah, that could happen. That's not unrealistic.
Right. Well, and it's like... And I'm sure this probably applies to the show too, but like Margaret Atwood's guiding principle in writing the book is that it couldn't be anything that didn't happen somewhere in the world. And I think the show does also live by that principle. Yeah. So
totally.
It's meant to like shock us back to reality in that way.
Right. Right. Okay. So let's talk a little bit more in broad terms before we get into some of the, so that will bring us to some of the more specifics. I have to say that all of my notes listed Lawrence as Commander Josh and
Commander Josh.
And Winslow as Commander Stabler. So I had a really hard time remembering their names.
I actually couldn't remember Stabler's character name, so thanks.
You're welcome. It was Winslow. But again, I kept calling him
Commander, I hate him.
Yeah. Commander burned in the fire.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was my own little humor to myself early on. I was like, if this season sucks, at least I have Commander Josh and Commander Stabler. So overall, what did you like about this season? I liked that it was more hopeful. I liked that they kind of showed that resistance isn't futile. I liked that.
Yeah.
I had some issues with I liked that they showed June's mental health, but I also thought that there was, I get the snapping out of it real quick and then going back into like that intensity. I read afterwards that Elizabeth Moss had actually played the season, she had played the season as though she was like an anti-hero, which I guess kind of explains a lot of the like brooding looks and like kind of almost sinister looks that we saw from her. I don't know if the editing did that anti-hero thing justice because
I buy it. Yeah. I feel like a lot of the time I was like, oh, can I root for her? Like,
well, see,
she seems a little unhinged. So I feel like I picked up what they were dropping down.
See, so
yeah, it sort of reminded me a little bit of Dolores in certain ways, in certain scenes. From
Westworld. You know.
Yeah. But overall, obviously not the same turn. I mean, I do feel like they ended every single episode with a close up of her eyes.
Right.
Which was maybe a little bit much after doing it like 13 times in a row.
And a killer song.
I get it. They're beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was just, it's so nice after like watching so much trauma to finally get some wins.
Right.
And there were a lot of, there were big wins, like Serena and the commander being taken into custody. That was like so fucking satisfying.
Especially
when it turned around on Serena too. Mm-hmm. But there were little wins too. Like when, after the hospital, and like June is back, and they round up all of the handmaids because the president guy is like coming, and Serena's there with God, what's his fucking name? With her original rapist.
Waterford. Yeah, Fred. Serena's there with Fred.
So the Waterford and the Waterfords are there, and she has that little exchange with Serena where she asks how she's doing or how her arm is or whatever, because she had stabbed her.
Yeah.
Even that, you know, is a small little victory, but it was very satisfying.
Right.
Yeah.
There were parts in the middle that disturbed me. Like, I got it with Natalie, aka of Matthew, that whole thing. I got how, you know, the cruelty towards her. But the actual payoff of that with her, you know, losing her mind, kind of like that kind of disturbed me a little bit. But again, I got it. I thought they did a really good job of explaining, like, desperate times call for desperate measures. And it wasn't just seeing it through June and Natalie and Janine. It wasn't seeing it. And Eleanor, you know, gosh, the character of Eleanor was just a whole bag of deep breaths. But like, I really enjoyed seeing the scenes with Emily and Moira where they talk about like the things that they did in Gilead. And, you know, Emily talks about, you know, the people that she killed. And Moira's like, well, do you have any urges to do that now? And she was like, no. And she's like, yeah, because we're not in those desperate times. We're not caged animals anymore. And I really liked the kind of like the narration outside of what was happening to, you know, put it together with what was happening to June. I thought that was kind of a nice, like, you know, accompaniment. Side piece. Yeah.
I like to see the post Gilead stories as you had said. I loved to put Emily and Moira together.
Yes. Yeah. Oh my God. When they were talking about like, how do we not have any lesbians in common?
Interesting characters that like had, you know, their paths had never crossed. And I just thought it was just so wonderful to put the two of them together, and just the way those scenes were composed, it was just so satisfying and so enjoyable to watch.
Yes.
Yeah. No, and I'm totally on board to watch a fourth season that takes place mostly outside of Gilead or post Gilead or whatever. I'm just saying, like, I could also see a case for like that being an end to that story, but yeah. I'm totally there for that. But in season three, to go back to some of the characters, because you mentioned, you know, Mrs. Lawrence, like the Lawrences in general, I found to be such fascinating characters because I love how they actually said it like that. That's part of the victory too, was like finally being able to say things out loud that are true and that you feel, like June being able to say to Commander Lawrence that he is part of the problem and that he created this world and that he, you know, basically deserves whatever he's going to get. And for his wife to say that too. And then you realize like, yeah, and she's also complicit. Like, but they're at the same time, they have these things about them that are like super likable. And like Lawrence, you know, helped
Emily and Nicole.
Emily escape. And, you know, so he did some good things, but then you're like, oh yeah, but still he thinks that he's outside of the reach of the law here. And he's the architect of this. So it's like, you know, on the one hand, it's like, when we first meet him, you know, you think like, oh, wow, he's like not raping handmaids. Like, what an amazing guy, right?
The bar is so low.
But then you're like, okay, well, he's not raping handmaids in his own house, but he's signing off on that happening in every other house. So like, no, that's actually, there's nothing redeemable about that.
Right. And I do enjoy that, like, ultimately what gets Lawrence on board to help is that he almost has nothing left to lose.
Yeah.
That, like, he can't go back to the world which he helped build. He can't get out. He knows the end is coming for him, so.
Totally. It's not courageous what he does. It's just he sees the walls closing in and he's like, oh, okay.
Well, I think Eleanor's condition also had a bit of it for him too, which again, like, that's this whole season to me is you have these heinous acts committed by people from Lawrence to Fred to Serena to even to June, And then you have this like one redeeming quality, something that brings you back to like the human element of what they're going through, which I guess is good storytelling. Like Serena, all she wanted, you know, was to have a baby. And then all she wanted was to be reignited with Nicole. I guess Fred doesn't really have, you know, Fred Waterford doesn't really have any redeeming qualities, but nope. He did get laid before he left, like without having to rape someone. So that's cool, I guess.
to go back to Serena, I don't think that's a redeeming quality. Again, and it's like said in the thing, like she doesn't have the kid's best interest in heart.
No,
it's actually an act of selfishness. It's not an act of love. So for me, that's not, Serena doesn't have any redeeming qualities for me.
Right. And I don't think it's redeeming qualities. I think it's contradiction, because I think to be human is a contradiction in terms that like nothing is 100% evil. Nothing is 100% good. So I like that these characters are presented in a real and natural way that, yeah, they can be the architects of this terrible, heinous thing, but you know, they can still love their wife and like want to do good by their wife. Like they're not mutually exclusive. It's just part of a bigger, convoluted mess that makes a human being.
Yeah. Exactly. Like when he had one of the lines that I thought was so hilarious when Lawrence was talking about how Fred and Serena were in custody and he goes, yeah, I guess he didn't have 52 kids with him. And just the way he delivered it too. So he's like this really funny guy, but he's also a terrible, terrible
son of a bitch. Yeah.
Well, that's because Bradley Whitford is amazing.
Right. And I do love that, like, post West Wing Bradley Whitford, like this and Get Out, and just playing these really kind of awful characters, but like we know him as Josh. We know him as like this great, like,
right, he's Josh Lyman.
Honest. He's Josh Lyman. Like, he is gonna like fight the good fight.
He's the deputy gonna, like, chief
wing
of staff.
Every windmill. And then now he's taking on these roles. So I think he automatically, just by putting that actor in these characters, you already like imbue them with a bit more humanity than they would have gotten from another actor.
Right. Yeah, I think that that's probably true. The same with Yvonne Strahovski, like, who plays Serena Joy. She does a great job.
She is just amazing.
Yeah, right.
Oh, she's great. She's great.
Like, she, but again, like, from what I was getting at is even that selfishness, like, she doesn't want harm to come to Nicole, and she has that motivation of she genuinely thinks that she would, well, I don't know if she thinks she would be better from Nicole, which is maybe why
she knows. She knows. I mean, she lost a finger because she knows.
But her motivation is still,
and especially girl kids are not better off in Gilead.
Right. Right. But you still have these moments where you,
your motivation is like, I love this child.
Oh, do I feel sorry for Serena right now? Like, oh.
Right.
But every time you do, she does something super shitty afterwards.
Right. And I do kind of love that.
Hold on.
The writing that they always bring you back around. You're like, no, you're actually not supposed to.
Well, June even says it at the end.
We got you.
Okay.
June says it to Rita, like, she's only nice when she's up to something.
Yeah, that's true. But look, okay, here's my notes for the end of episode 5. Do you see the very last thing I wrote?
Yeah.
It says, "Fuck you, Serena," in all capital letters. But again, terrible. I found myself sympathizing. Like, I don't know. I don't want to say mother to mother, but like, you know, I could understand you love this baby.
Like, she's not even her fucking mother either. Right. That's the other thing. That's like, I mean, obviously a whole other thing.
But then, are we going to classify that only women who have given birth to a baby can call themselves a mother?
Like, absolutely even not. But only women. Only women who have a baby by means other than abduction are mothers. Adoption is fine.
Right.
And great when all parties are
complicit. You
know, when the birth mother is like signs off on it.
Right. Right. But again, I had moments with Serena where I could see that she the cognitive dissonance was faltering and the compartmentalizing was not quite there. But again, like you said, that, you know, it was selfish at the end, but it was pretty awesome that she betrayed Fred. So that was kind of
great. It was great that she betrayed Fred.
But that's also pretty damn selfish because she thought it would get her closer to Nicole.
Yep.
That nothing would come between her and
getting
her baby back.
Although, to be fair, like the problems between her and Fred had been brewing for a really long time. So,
okay. So, all your points about Serena, guys, like super, super on point. Like, definitely, you guys, pulled me out of my like sentimentality or whatever. Let's talk a little bit about. Should we talk about Commander Stabler or do we want to get right into I have a question. Did they say all six of those kids were his kids? Like did he fuck a baby into her, like Olivia, like six times, or were those like all kidnapped children?
I think just given the ages of some of them, I think some of them had to be kidnapped. And weren't they all not white?
I don't remember because I was watching a lot of that yesterday when I was
They were definitely not all white, but he could have had handmaids from various backgrounds.
That's fair.
I would assume that at least some of them were kidnapped. And then also I would assume with his stature.
Okay, that was my next question was the six of them clearly were meant to show his stature, but was it his stature because he was the definition of a man because he was able to
maybe a little bit of both
times, yeah. Or
if he's not fit to lead his household, then he's not fit to lead Gilead,
right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, his ending was kind of satisfying.
Oh my god,
it was so much satisfying.
And I love that it came back to Martha that she had saved one of the five.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I thought that was a little bit convenient and a little bit quick. But I loved the shit out of it. With that. 100% on board.
Remember the connection, when she was like, "Oh, you saved me in Chicago." Like I couldn't remember. And maybe because it was so quick, I was like, "Huh?"
So when June traveled with Commander Josh, that was when she had the argument with him, "Why did you save Emily?" And he was like, "I saved Emily because she had something to offer to the world. What do you have?" And then he was like, "Prove yourself by picking five women to save." And at the end of the episode, she picks five, and it's she tells Sienna what's her name, "There, I picked five that are going to be good for the resistance," and then listed their occupations, and
one of which was a thief. It was scientist,
A journalist,
whatever. Thief.
Yeah. Which was awesome. I really love that.
Which even that, it's a moment where you do for a moment see Commander Lawrence's struggle and the whole point behind we can't save them all. So you pick which ones, you see how hard it is, but it's that's not fair because you are the person who fucking created this world. So right. Yeah, it's a nice try, but no.
Right.
Not completely off the hook there, sir.
Yes. It's not like somebody is forcing you to. Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's not that somebody is forcing you at gunpoint to choose. You kind of put this on yourself.
So the Commander Lawrence storyline and the talk about having to go along with something in order to survive, and then add that to current day events, where people go along with some pretty heinous things in order to I don't know,
in order
save
to
themselves.
Maintain their privilege.
Or save themselves. What? It just got me thinking just about human nature in general, which we've talked about, but I just wanted to point that out as well. I will say that I think what was the most powerful moment or message or even scene for you guys this season? Because
that's tough. I did kind of watch them really spaced out. So
I can start
latter episode.
I can start if it will jog something.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think that the most powerful / poignant moment for me the entire season was the end of the episode when Natalie dies and she's sitting there and she's saying "I'm not going to let this be for nothing. I'm going to get them out," or whatever she said, that whole thing. And the credits go and you hear the heartbeat monitor, and it you know, is normal, and it gets slower, and then it gets slower, and then it gets slower, and then it stops, and the rest of the credits are in silence. And to me, that was like,
yeah, that was a good moment,
like a turning point for the whole season, where like now June was okay. Like, I got to get to work. Like, I've spent this time and I've done some pretty shitty things and I might have inadvertently caused a woman to die, but like, all right, I got to make this. I got to make up for it. I got to do this. And I don't know, to me, that was just a very chilling moment.
Yeah.
Also, yeah, I totally love the music this episode, this season. Like,
yeah.
Music is always so good. I really do love how they really go for like these really unexpected choices. And there's always like this really interesting juxtaposition between the song choice and like the visual.
Yeah.
And I think it's always a slam dunk for me.
There was one point I wrote down in episode 5, which was when in between. So it was when Serena was going to meet with Luke and Nicole. I wrote down, why is the Leftovers music playing? I guess that was a thing while we're talking about the music. But let's see.
I love that was another of those small victory moments where Moira actually got to
tell Serena,
like, say her truth to to Serena. That's, I find that so satisfying. And I loved when she when she's going off on Serena and then the American is like, that's uncalled for. And she just goes, fuck you.
You're the gender.
And keeps going.
Yeah. And then she tells Serena.
Who even are you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And she tells Serena, you're the gender traitor.
Yeah. No, it was great.
Which was awesome. Like an awesome moment. Which, okay. So let's go to like the whole women thing. June at one point talks about her mom and says, I'm trying to find it here, but she talks about how her mom wanted to see like a women run the world or a coalition of women. And she's like, well, you know, here it is. Like, we might not have all of the rights and the freedom, but we're calling the shots now or something like that, which, you know, again, I wrote it down, but there's a lot of notes here. I just thought that whole, the whole thing. I also wrote down that the crowd when they go to DC is bigger than the crowd for Trump's inauguration.
And holy shit, those rings and masks. Terrible. Oh.
Really, really terrifying.
God, that was awful. That was awful. Like, even Aunt Lydia was like, too much. And I'm okay with, like, you know, maiming clits, but I think that that's too much, so.
I did enjoy that we got some Aunt Lydia backstory.
Yeah, definitely.
I thought that really felt very true to character, and I think it helped, like, shade in some things and add a little more texture to her character.
Oh, okay. I found my quote, and then let's definitely talk about that, because that was actually a part of my anti-hero mentality, victimhood. I was going to mention Serena, but we've already been in this. Okay, so the quote was, Mom, you wanted a women's culture. Now there is one. It's not the one you wanted, but it exists. And I think that was in episode 3, and I think that really set the tone for the rest of the season, which just the women looking out. I mean, they always looked out for each other, but it felt like something had changed and there wasn't as much fear, which I guess, you know, you start a new job, you go to a new school or something, and you don't know what the rules are. And once you figure out the rules, you figure out how to, like, circumvent them a little bit. And then that kind of is what season 3 felt like to me, where they had kind of figured out, like, okay, we...
And felt each other out. And
Yeah.
Figured out who they could trust. And
exactly. And I did love that this whole season essentially was a culture of women that were banding together to be Mayday, to be the resistance.
Yeah,
totally. Mm-hmm. And then you contrast that to the commander's wives, which is, you know, obviously like a very obvious parallel to, you know, like all of the white women that voted for Trump, for example.
Yeah. Okay. So Aunt Lydia, we got her backstory, and it was, I mean, the dude didn't really turn her down. He was just like, I need to go slowly, and
she was, but I think to sort of speak to your idea of like victimhood and making oneself
exactly
the victim.
Yeah. And I mean, I think like all the Lydia stuff, and it's just, I think, really indicative of how religion can really poison sexuality, equality, and just like a person's even like, I don't know, view of what's going on and right and wrong. And, cause that's, you know, all of that was sort of like coalesced in her reaction.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cause everything she did, she was motivated out of what she interpreted as love and doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's what makes it so startling.
See, yes and no. She knew that she was doing wrong with the mother Noel. She was just mad because Noel suggested that she go on the date with the principal, and then
yeah, but she used her faith and belief to
justify tell
her, to justify and to tell herself she was doing the right thing. Which, but, yes, I believe the underlying motivation. I agree with you. But I think she sort of used her faith as the justification for, I'm just doing what's best for the child.
Which, again, like, even Serena, not to go back to, I don't know why I'm making this, like, fucking stand for Serena here, but maybe I just love Yvonne Strahovski, because I do love her. She even says, like, well, a religious ceremony, like, that I went along with, like, that's not, that, you know, it's religious, it's not rape, like, even that, like, yeah, I don't know. Just
again, religion poisoning equality,
and then
and sexuality, and
right,
you know,
and then you think about Commander Stabler when he was it Stabler or what? No, it wasn't. I'm sorry, it wasn't Stabler. It was Fred Waterford to Luke when he saw him in Canada, and he was like, I did something when the birth rates were declining. What did you do?
I loved that, and I wish that Luke would have just responded like, I produced a child.
Right.
And then it was kidnapped from me.
Had a baby.
Yeah, right. I really wish that he would have answered, but I think that's also one of those things where it's like, well, if we do get to that point, and like, you know, with like climate change and the, you know, impending like doom and disasters, we very well could. But if we get to the point where really like let me try to phrase this. If we get to the point where quote unquote saving humanity and saving like, you know, the species is at the expense of losing all human rights, then what's the point? Then maybe we deserve to go extinct. Like,
yeah. I mean, it's a hard question to think about, but it's, I don't think it's not, I think it's valid.
Cause like, I mean, seriously, what's the point of humans existing? If let's say the whole planet was Gilead, what would be the point of humans existing?
Mm-hmm. Well, for men, it would be, you know, different than for women.
But also not, I don't think every man also benefits from that structure.
Right. Well,
no,
yes.
Oh, definitely not.
No, clearly not. Clearly not. And I think the overall theme of this season was examining survival, right? Like, who is in it to survive? Who is in it for the power? And does that primal urge for survival, like, what we're talking about with anti-hero, right? Like, does that primal urge for survival push you to do things? And is there a point where it's too far, or can you get out like Emily and Moira and go back to the person that you were and just chalk it up to survival? But I read something, and I'm sorry that I can't cite it, but it mentioned like revolutionary / survivor versus terrorist. Like, is there a difference between a revolutionary and a terrorist if both have the same means but the ends are different? Is June, you know, Elizabeth Moss had commented at the premiere of the season that she played her like an anti-hero. Was she an anti-hero, or was she a hero versus was she just a woman who was just, you know, clawing out to survive? And, you know, does that make her a hero, or does that just make her a survivor? Like, there's just so many different, I guess, I think, layers and levels.
Yeah.
I mean, and her character even addressed that at one point. She said, like, I'm not a terrorist yet.
Exactly.
Something to that effect.
I think there was a lot of exploring, like, what radicalizes a person? And does it make you just as bad?
In her particular case, I would argue, no, it doesn't make you just as bad. Like, she is just trying to survive. She herself is being terrorized.
Right.
Like, that's what Gilead does, is it terrorizes everyone, and she's trying to fight back.
Yeah, and speaking of Gilead being a shitty place, like, fucking Eleanor, whatever, water, no, Eleanor Lyman was...
Lawrence,
thank you.
Eleanor.
Eleanor. Like, that, she had what, bipolar? Was that what it was, or was it, it wasn't schizophrenia?
I don't know if they ever specified.
They did, but she clearly had one of the, you know, she clearly was... had a mental illness, correct? She was mentally
ill. I don't know if it was bipolar. Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe schizophrenia. Best not.
They said that she needed armchair
diagnosis. Yeah, I think it was unspecified for a reason, probably. But she definitely. She said she needed mood stabilizers at one point.
Yes.
It's kind of crazy that even a commander's wife can't get mood stabilizers, and that just goes. You know, then Lawrence talks about. The two things that I underestimated was, you know, a mother's love and mental health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like you build this world not thinking about the consequences until they affect you.
Right.
Right. It's almost like they built that world not thinking about women.
No, it's almost like they built that
it's
world
almost like
not
there weren't
thinking
any women
that
in the room.
Women, yeah. It's like they built that world without thinking that women were people that would have problems.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah,
or
exactly.
Just like, I mean, mental health is also not just restricted to women.
No,
exactly.
No, yeah, I was saying that more for the
a lot of underrepresentation and yeah.
Right. Yes. Agreed. The other concern, I had one concern, like actual concern, while I was watching this this season that kind of nagged at me, but I pushed it back. June, did she like kind of like appropriate or co-opt what the Martha's their whole thing? Because at one point she just comes in and she's like, we're doing this, and you know, they have concerns because they've got their thing going, and yeah, she had a great reason for what she was coming out, but she also kind of like turned it into her thing versus, like, you know, she like went into an already established operation, was like, you guys are listening to me now.
Well, I think that also plays a little bit into the
mental.
June is the anti-hero.
True.
That, yeah, she didn't ask for permission. She didn't play nice.
She didn't give it
an
option.
She did just kind of like walk in, insert herself, and be like, you know, this is my resistance now.
Right.
Which I think is also interesting given the cast, because June is cast as a white woman.
Yes.
To get back to like the race dynamics. And many of those Marthas who were
Women of color.
That meeting in particular were mostly women of color. And so it was, that's an interesting thing. And even at the very end, like when she's being, you know, hauled away, it's like very sort of reminiscent of like a casket being carried by pallbearers, but her as like this hero, and it is a little, I don't know, I found myself wishing that June wasn't fucking white, but
right, it's so okay, so you felt a little uncomfortable at times too with her savior complex.
Yeah,
there were times where I was like, you're our hero, but I don't know,
but
yeah. Okay, but not to take anything away from the fact that, you know, she almost fucking died. Do you think that the show would be kind of badass if she did die and then we only saw June in, like, flashbacks next season?
I'd be totally fine with that. You know, Frank just finished it, too, and we were talking about it a little bit, and he was like, well, the hero can't die. It's like, well, but she could. Like,
not necessarily. But, sorry, I'll let you finish. Sorry.
Oh, no, that's it. I was going to return
to the text of the of the source material.
Yeah. I think it would be fitting that June never leave Gilead. And she has said not without Hannah, but it would almost be too cute if she succeeded in going and getting Hannah and then they all lived happily ever after, which we know that they're not going to live happily ever after, whatever. We've seen sort of like the post-traumatic stress of coming out of Gilead, but still, I think that would almost be a little too tied up with a nice bow. So I think it would be fitting that June die in Gilead, and I would be totally fine with that, and we could go on without her. But
don't know.
Right. Well, and if we remember back to the book, the epilogue of the book, and hopefully I'm not spoiling this. Dude, if you guys have watched the series and have not read the book, go read the book. Like, just stop.
Yeah.
Read the book. Okay, you back? Great. Okay, cool. Let's keep talking. The epilogue in the book, it takes place like 20 years after Gilead, and sort of we come to find out that the bulk of the book was conceived of these tapes that are found somewhere, I think in Maine, like hidden in a floorboard.
Right.
So, and they don't know exactly who this woman was or what happened to her. But you're sort of led to believe that, like,
she didn't make it. She was like,
chances are she got intercepted and did not make it.
Right. She Anne Franked, which I know is a terrible, but
yeah.
Which, just to add that in, don't lose your thought. We see that she finds the tapes in the
Lawrence's
basement. I loved that. But yeah, and then, I mean, I suppose if we want to stay on the literary train, I'm curious to see now that there is a sequel to The Handmaid's Tale. I'm very curious to see how, where that goes. I think it's already confirmed that it doesn't follow June's storyline. It follows three other characters, one of which is Aunt Lydia, which I think is very, very interesting. But
it takes place like 10 or 15 years later, right?
Yeah. And Margaret Atwood was writing it before and sort of during the beginning of Handmaid's Tale, the series. So that's also why they were in very close contact.
Yes.
Because
so they
what
wouldn't...
the series was doing, like, had to sort of also be working in with the new book that she was writing. And also, Hulu already has the rights to the screen adaptation of it. So now it's a matter of figuring out, will this then factor into the series in some way? Will this be its own standalone thing?
I heard that it's going to be its own standalone thing.
I think the thing I read, it's still like too soon to tell. They haven't decided yet.
Well, it hasn't even been published yet, so officially.
Right. It just came out today, guys. Just came out today.
Okay.
I was going to say, isn't it soon? Oh, okay.
So it came out.
Oh, I should reserve mine at the library. I should have done that before.
Oh, this is, I got
to
buy this.
I'm going to be
to make up for the copy of The Handmaid's Tale that I lost.
Everybody go through.
Someone you know has my Handmaid's Tale. Send it home.
jandjack.com/Amazon. I'll put it in the show notes. Both of you, do not freaking order it without going through that Amazon link. Come on, just do it.
Okay.
Okay. What is the name of the sequel?
The Testament.
The Testament. Right.
Hold on. I have that link.
It sounds like one of the little girls could possibly be Nicole.
It is entirely possible. It's a child that grew up in
Canada that comes
to find out that they were born in Gilead. So it 100% could be Nicole. And crackpot theory, Colleen, I really hope that that's what it is.
I think it might be. I think that that's why they got Nicole out.
Yeah. I love it. Love that theory. I'm so on board for it.
Me too. And maybe June isn't dead. Maybe Nicole goes back. It's, I don't know, she's 10, so maybe not. But, like, I don't know, maybe she progresses in age and, like, it ends, like, 20 years later and she goes back and she gets her mom out. That would be so great. Oh, my God, wouldn't that be so great?
That'd be really satisfying.
I know. That would be sad. That would be.
I don't think it would work within, like, the sort of world of the series, but all that would just make my heart ever
I know,
so happy.
Right? Like, the daughter that she got out was able to go back and get her 20 years later.
Or what if Nicole goes back, finds out about Hannah, and goes back and saves Hannah?
Yeah, maybe.
I think that could be more interesting, because then it's like you're finding Hannah as an adult who's been indoctrinated in this world, and maybe she needs a little, like, de-brainwashing. I feel like that could be, like, super, super interesting.
Right. She needs, like, an MSNBC bath from her Fox News.
Yeah.
Bedroom. Oh, my God. Exactly. Side note, I just put a hold on it at my library, and I'm 22nd in the wait list, which is better than when I did that for Becoming, and I was, like, 41st.
Good times. I'll-
and then Colleen sent me the actual book, and then I didn't,
anyway. That's right. I did send that to you. I forgot I sent it. That was like a year ago.
That was a year ago.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
That was a really fucking good read.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good times. Does anybody else have anything? We've talked about next season. We've talked about heroes versus anti-heroes.
I thought you were going to say heroes versus villains.
Heroes versus villains.
Heroes versus villains.
June is totally a Sandra Diaz kind, let's be honest.
Totally.
Right.
Totally. I don't know who that is, but sure.
Like the only time that we ever Carlene talk, and I talk about
Survivor,
something
we talk about Sandra.
That Amanda doesn't know about, and it's not the reverse of me not knowing the thing. It's always a Survivor reference.
Yeah,
always an
or Superstore or
no, you don't.
There's a few things now that I'm on the.
You're gonna watch Superstore
outside
though.
Of the glass.
You're gonna watch at. Superstore, and you're gonna be with us
someday. I'm a few episodes into The Good Place.
Oh, God.
Well, season three. For those watching at home.
Okay. Anyway, getting back to this. Last minute thoughts, and then we'll get to some feedback. I'm sure the feedback will lead to some other thoughts, but who's got anything? Anybody got anything?
I'm so excited to see where they take it in season four.
All right. Me too. Actually, I am. And we'll see you back here next September for... Another decision.
For that.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick commercial break and then we'll come back and we'll hear what everybody else had to think and then we'll get out of here. All right. We are back from our break and we are going to kick off feedback with a voicemail from Maggie the Magnificent.
Hey, Amanda, Shani, and Colleen. It's Maggie. I have literally just finished season 3 of Handmaid's Tale. And oh my fucking God. I can't even. I'm gonna put spoilers on my email, but I'm just gonna say it here. If you've not finished, don't see all of the season 3, all 13 episodes. Don't watch, don't listen, because I can't. I'm about to like spoil it the crap out of this because oh my god, they got kids. June got kids out, and she got shot, and oh my god, she let Mrs. Lawrence die. And oh my god, the little girl found her father. Oh my god, and I was dying. I wanted Luke to see Hannah there but I was like, if June didn't know Hannah was there, that would have been the worst, like, that would have been awful. But oh my god. Oh my god. So that was freaking amazing. I don't know where the hell they go from here. But yeah, I've watched the third season. It's not been the best, I don't think. But wow. I actually have notes on other things to like tell you about Handmaid's Tale, and I'll call that in later, maybe. But like, oh my god. And I guess I keep saying that, but I can't. Like, it was fucking amazing. And they got, well, she was supposed to get 52 children out, but she got way more out. And I still can't even. And this is so rambling. I'm really sorry. But it literally just, like, stopped. And Serena and Fred are in fucking jail. Thank fucking God.
In his fucking resort jail, June Maggie.
Killed. Yeah. Stabler from SVU. I don't, Chris,
thank
for
you.
Somebody I don't, that actor is just always going to be Stabler from SVU. There's no other thing that he's going to be.
Or the dude from Oz.
Oh my gosh. Wow. It was freaking interesting. So, okay, I'm going to try and collect my thoughts a little better than that, but I'll send this off and then I'll do some other call, send another thing soon. Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, well, that was definitely some real time.
Oh, we like went on a journey with Maggie.
I feel like
I loved that.
Did.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. All right. Well, Maggie had another voicemail. We'll get to that in a minute. Let's just play Maggie's second voicemail now.
Yeah, let's just do that.
All right, let's hear what Maggie had to say once she collected her thoughts.
Hello, Amanda, Shandy, and Colleen. It's Maggie again with some more generalized whole season stuff from Handmaid's Tale. I literally took some notes because I was like, oh, I got to remember this for when the broads talk about it. Okay, my notes. Okay, I really feel like Serena going to Canada to visit the baby
Nicole, seems like a really bad plan. It really just seemed like it was like Game of Thrones season 7. Cersei's got to see a White Walker. Bad plan. Like, why? It just made no sense.
She's not wrong.
Yeah. One of the greatest lines, maybe the whole show, was when June said, talking about Fred and Serena, maybe they both get hit by a fucking truck. Yes, please. They do need to. DC, the stuff in DC was really freaky and really, really scary. Maybe because I live in DC and, like, you know, you drive around close enough and it's like, oh, there's the Washington Monument. There's the Washington Monument, like, all the time. But, oh, yeah, that was really creepy. Oh, with, God.
Yeah, I actually, pausing this for a second, I made the note, too, that the headless Abraham Lincoln was, like, some heavy, heavy, heavy,
All that imagery. Yeah.
I'm sure Nick liked that, though. But seriously, that Washington Monument cross was chilling.
Yeah
it was.
Yeah, they really did a, I mean, again, and we didn't really talk about this, but this really is one of the most beautifully produced shows on television, quote unquote. Just, it's visually so stunning and it just looks so beautiful, and they, like, make these moments visually that just take your breath away.
Yeah But just the imagery of, you know, Lincoln and the slaves, and then he's headless and now they're all slaves again, was just, I don't know, the imagery of that was just very chilling for me. Okay, I'm sorry, Maggie. I'm gonna let you finish.
The Lincoln Memorial gone, and the collar, and that was, oh, that just made me so mad. That part, some of those was hard to watch. I'm really glad June told Luke about Nicole's dad, about what's his name? Now I can't remember his name. Nick. We didn't see much of him the end of the season. I wonder if where he is off to. Just a thought I had. That testifying that they did, that was terrifying. Against June and then against Matthew or Natalie. Yeah, that was really scary. So I was super excited to get Aunt Lydia's backstory, but it kind of pissed me off. They do not let teachers take a kid home. That isn't possible. That's why,
Maggie, you teach in a private school. This is a Christian school.
Why parents give other emergency contacts, because if you can't reach the parent and you wait, you know, you have, and they're not showing up, you call someone else to come get the kid. Because I really think it almost either CPS would be called or the police if it got so late, like as late as it did for that story. But the Aunt Lydia backstory was kind of awesome. A little. It was interesting. It was interesting to get the story. I kind of almost felt sorry for her. Almost. I was glad she didn't want her girls to go through the stuff in DC. I know, I feel bad liking Aunt Lydia a little bit because she is so awful, but the actress is amazing. So, yeah. And just give Elizabeth Moss all of the Emmys, all of the awards, because her in that episode with her in that hospital room with Natalie was craziness. It was craziness. And I think I talked about my other notes later. So I really did enjoy the season. I don't know where it's going next. I was watching some and my roommate was like, June kind of has plot armor, doesn't she? And I'm like, yep, she totally does. Yeah, she totally is still alive because the plot needs to her to be alive.
Yep.
But I'm totally okay with that because Elizabeth Moss is amazing. So that's kind of cool. I don't know if you heard, but Margaret Atwood has a sequel to The Handmaid's Tale that just came out. I can't remember what it's called, but I've heard a little bit about
20
it.
20 seconds. 20 seconds on the list,
Maggie.
I read
The Handmaid's Tale. I probably should do that, but now there's a sequel, which is kind of cool. So can't wait to hear what you ladies think of Handmaid's Tale Season 3. And I will talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hold on.
Bye-bye. I have never heard of it referred to as plot armor before. I love
that.
Really?
You've never heard
that? Yeah, that's great. That's great.
good times. Yes.
And again, like, I think it would make sense if she died. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, I don't need June getting out of Gilead. I feel like...
Oh, I would love to see June get out of Gilead. I mean, you know, they're a romantic, happy ending person in me. I would love to see her get out of Gilead and the final scene be... This is just, you know, my pipe dream, but, like, her getting off with Hannah or seeing Hannah and Luke and, like, it's just ending with them all hugging and she is like, okay, I can rest now. And maybe even she's, like, dying when she hits Canada, but, like, she hits... I don't know. I want her to have a happy ending because she fought so hard and she's supposed to be a survivor, right?
I know. This whole and I love that too, but season. I feel like June would have to be in a different show for that to happen.
I don't know. Mm-hmm. We have this whole season that's just talking about, like, how... You know, being a caged animal makes you into an animal that then makes you have to separate yourself, that makes you have to survive, right? So, like, some people, like, of Matthew pick survival in, like, compliance, and other people, like, June pick survival in fighting back. So, it would, to me, be, I don't know, I would not think that we had watched this show for nothing if June survived at the end and got to be with Hannah and Luke and Nicole.
Yeah, I mean, I think ultimately, like, I'm fine with her dying, but I also wouldn't. It's not like I would be mad if she survived. You know, I'm sort of cool with all options, and I think all of it is interesting because it would be interesting to see, like, how does she readjust when she's no longer caged?
Right.
Like, I mean, you talk about a happy ending for June, but what is a happy ending for June? Can she have a happy ending after this much trauma? You know, well, like, that's going to take so much therapy. And I do really love that they showed us a little bit of what that looks like for Emily.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Even just, like, she can't just go back to her wife and her son like it was before.
Right.
It's going to take a lot. And maybe never get there, you know, like with her wife specifically.
I think that, I don't know, you think they're going to Walter White her?
June or Emily?
June.
I don't know what that means.
Actually never watched Breaking Bad, so I kind of sort of know what you're talking about, but also don't feel confident enough to give an answer because I feel like it would be wrong.
So spoiler alert, in Breaking Bad, Walter White's diagnosed with cancer in the first season, and he makes meth to pay his medical bills because America, and he ends up being really good at making meth and goes on that power trip and becomes the danger, so to speak. And at the end of the series, like, he is not a good guy anymore. He's not the good guy from season one, and you know, you just go through. It's not like, you know, in Dexter. Dexter's your anti-hero, but Dexter was, like, kind of a bad guy from day one, right?
Dexter was never a good guy.
He was never a good guy. Like, Walter White was a good guy. June was a good guy, right? So, I just hope that we don't get to the point where we're okay with June dying because she's done so many horrible things in the name of survival. Well, no, yeah, Walter White is different because he was, like, in the name of power after a while, but, like, right. Still.
But I think that's a very valid, plausible direction they could take the show.
Me too, especially, again, hearing that Elizabeth Moss had said that she was playing her like an anti-hero. So how do you define anti-hero? Are we talking? Because I sat through several anti-hero panels at Comic-Con. So are we talking like the Dexter anti-hero? Are we talking about the Walter White you know, like, where are we going with, or, you know, are we talking about an anti-hero more benign, you know?
I think that... from what we've seen so far, June's positive things will always outweigh what Gilead makes her into. Because we saw in those last scenes, you know, when Rita tells Luke, like, this is June. June did this. You know, June saved 52 kids. And whatever's going to happen with the kids afterwards, you know, I don't think anyone is going to ever say that that wasn't a good thing to have done or... you know, a positive action. even though, yeah, like she's become a murderer in a way. I mean, it depends how you define murderer, but like she killed that one dude, but because he was trying to rape her. So, you know, she let another person die, but yeah, that person
could have ruined her plans. But again, like, yeah. Is that her standard now? Like a human being's life versus, you know, like you can make the argument, like a human being's life versus your plan that you, you know, have put stock into. Okay, it's not, Eleanor doesn't survive, she could be a risk at my plan that's happening tomorrow.
Well, and I think it's more than that, though. It's like very similar to how Emily killed, although that was actually like an active murder, whereas June just let her, she just let the overdose happen. Yeah. But Emily like actually murdered a commander's wife in the colonies. But again, like I think we can all, not like excusing murder, obviously, but in the context of Handmaid's Tale, we can all sort of understand why she did that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so, again, like Eleanor is so much more likable. And that's what I think is wonderful with her character and Commander Lawrence's character is that it's so confusing and complex. But at the end of the day, she's complicit.
Mm-hmm. Eleanor is complicit or?
Eleanor is 100% complicit.
But okay, so here's my question going back to this was actually my question about Serena Joy, but I think it applies more to like an Eleanor. Those women who are the commander's wives, are they complicit because they're complicit or are they complicit because survival? Because if they speak out, they end up a handmaid or in the colonies or, you know, they lose their status. Like, are they complicit where they can be somebody like an Eleanor who is willing to, you know, take care of and cover for the resistance or, you know, or does it not matter? Like, you're complicit. There's no redeeming you. And I think that was one of the, like Amanda was talking about earlier, that's one of those great things about this season is, Are the commander's wives, yeah, they're complicit in that they hold those women down to get raped. But how much of that is their own survival versus anything else?
Well, I think just once again, it's like a very useful to compare it back to that obvious comparison of like the conservative white woman voter. You know, somebody who's going to vote for like a Trump or a MAGA or whoever else. But is a woman herself, somebody who's going to vote for somebody who brags about grabbing pussy, but is a woman herself. How do you wrap your head around that? It's exactly what you're saying, Colleen. It is because they're living in a patriarchal society that discriminates against them. Yes. So it's a little bit of it's survival to stay close to power, which is their white husbands. Mm-hmm. Does that make it okay? Still no. Still doesn't make it okay.
Yeah. So would you be okay with going to colonies and going to certain death over staying in a position of power where you could possibly save somebody from your position? Like, it's a tough choice. Like, do you stay true to your values and be 100% morally pure? Or do you sit by and say, okay, I'm going to leverage my position? Which I think, I honestly think that
Eleanor would have done that. We're not seeing any characters really do that, though.
I think
Eleanor is doing it kind of, but I think it's also like Eleanor is kind of an untrustworthy character because she openly admits, you know, she doesn't have her mood stabilizer. So like you kind of can't put too much weight into like she is actively trying to help the resistance. Yeah. Like she is just actively trying to survive in and of herself.
I don't see her ever doing anything to help the resistance whatsoever. I think she's a nice person. She's nice to June. She's nice to all of her maids who, even though she's like, what's the point of having all the maids you want when they can't actually clean anything? Like, you know, she's not actively against the system. She's just living inside her house and she's not being completely terrible inside her house. She's letting things pass. She's okay. Yeah. She's showing June like where certain files are, but like, it's not for me. It's not something that she's thought through that she's going to do this to try to help, you know, further the cause. It's just like, Oh, you want to know where these files are? It's down here. Okay. Oh, you have a gun. You should probably put that away. Come down and serve sandwiches. Like, it's...
The optimist in me disagrees, because I think that the reason that she went with, okay, I'll help you find those files. Okay, I'll help you find your daughter. Like, we see these moments of clarity where we're meant, I think, to believe, like... And we see, like, oh, then he would deserve it. Like, she has a point of understanding. Just because she has the mental illness that is going untreated doesn't mean... And is slowly losing her grip on reality. To me, I think that she still has tethers to it, which I think is why she committed suicide in the end, is because she knew that she was, without her medication, she was going to have less and less control, and she was going to be a liability, and that is why she wanted to remove herself from the equation. And that's how I interpreted it. And I think that I don't think that her, you know, doing those things was just because, you know, she was flighty or whatever. I think that that was who she was as a person. I don't think that she liked what her husband did. And I think that June even said, like, keeping her locked up here is what's contributing to her mental decline. And I think that what really kicked off the mental decline was hatred for what her husband had done.
Yeah, but she's not doing anything against it. She's not leveraging her relationship with him to actually influence him.
Because she's got that, or change
anything that he put into place. But she's
incapacitated a lot of the times. And I think that...
Well, even earlier on, like, you go back. Go back a few years when...
But what does that do? Land her first dead? Happening. Does that land her dead? So that way she can't, like, possibly help anybody? Like,
if her husband is the architect of the whole society, no, I don't think that lands her dead. I think she has...
I don't
way
know.
More power at that point if she chooses to use it, which she doesn't. She just goes,
I also don't think she's in a mental capacity to do such. I think
you at the beginning of Gilead.
But look at Eleanor.
At the beginning of Gilead, when she still had her meds.
But Serena lost her pinky speaking up. We see very much just like how it came together. And Serena's thing was obviously, you know, a little bit later. But like, I don't know. I feel like when things are happening so fast and you are not an immediate target, the natural reaction is to duck and cover. And then see, like, okay, where do I land and how can I help? And I think that Eleanor was one of those people who probably had the intentions of that, but her mental capacity kept her from doing, because like we hear things throughout the episode, the season rather. We hear things throughout the season where, you know, you promised me that you would never, you know, rape a handmaid, and you said that it wouldn't be this, and you said that it wouldn't be that. And that to me sounds like a woman who was told, who was mentally fragile, and who was told things to not placate her, but like keep her from killing herself.
No, but even that, I found that really disgusting, because it wasn't, that's not even, she didn't say, you promised me you'd never rape a handmaid. She said, you promised me we'd never have to do this. So again, it's like, it's fine for everyone else, but we're the exception to the rule. We're the puppet masters. We're setting up this society, and the rules don't, you know, the rules don't apply to us.
Right. And I can for me, that was as long as it doesn't affect me.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, I almost kind of liken Eleanor's character, like in listening to you guys talk, almost kind of like a white woman who went to a women's march and hasn't done anything since, and can kind of consider herself part of the movement, even though she did precious little.
I don't know. I think that is a way to describe Serena. I don't think that's a way to describe Eleanor.
Oh, no. I don't think I wouldn't give Serena that much credit at all.
No.
But if we were going to, I think Serena would fall.
Serena is like an Ann Coulter type. Absolutely. Yes. No. She does not. No.
Exactly.
Nope.
Exactly.
Nope. She gave up that pinky for herself.
Well, I don't know. I don't see Eleanor as that. I see her as a woman who has mental health issues, who was just caught up and unfortunately, like Commander Josh says, aka Lawrence, like, didn't account for mental health. Like, she was not prepared for that. She was not. And I think that there is room in Gilead, or there is room in the world, to accept that there are different responses to the way Gilead, or the way that women of Gilead would respond, and what we've seen from Eleanor. I don't think that she liked it. I don't think she enjoyed her privilege. I don't think that there was anything about it. Because, you know, we've heard, like, you know, she didn't go out. She didn't do this. She didn't do that. Like, I personally think that she was a fragile woman who was, you know, hushed along, like, come along by her husband, and didn't quite fully understand what was going on until she understood what was going on. And by then it was too late. And you know, it was touch and go. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. And we have spent like 100 minutes talking about Eleanor.
This is a fantastic conversation. I think these kind of conversations are actually, like, just outside of the show, I think are just, like, generally important. The sort of, like, how privilege manifests and who wields it and how much of it they wield. And I think it's how we move the ball forward is by having these very new, like, nuanced, really grainy, like, picking apart at white privilege and how white women yield it and whatever. But also, I super need to go to bed. So can we move on?
Yes, let's move on.
Okay.
I had one more
comparison.
Okay, fine.
The only thing I'll say, I think there are tons of comparisons that we could talk about in our contemporary society, but I'm going to go there. Like, I'm going to go back to World War II and just say, like, would we say that it's okay, the people who stood by and watched Jewish people being carted off, because there's this argument that, well, they were just trying to survive, and they're in, so they're watching it happen, and they're sort of not really doing anything active and still supporting Hitler. Like, would we say that that's okay for their own lives?
Mm-hmm.
No, it's not okay, but I'm not going to classify mental health issues in the same category as.
I just don't really see the mental health issues at all, though, because at the conception of Gilead, we can assume that she still had all of her meds, that she was on her meds. It's once Gilead came about, and then even then, she still got meds through the black market, and it's only more recently that she's not able to get the meds at all.
They say that, but we see a lot of evidence that even through the black market, she wasn't getting her meds on the regular.
Right. And even if she wasn't, I mean, she was still having moments of clarity enough that she could function. We have to assume that.
But she was speaking out during those moments of clarity. I don't know.
Well, I think it's not because of her mental illness.
Right.
It's in spite of, I think, is maybe more the argument here.
Okay. And I get that argument. I'm sure I'm going to get 100 emails that are telling me that I'm wrong. And that's fine. We have one more email from Matt.
Yeah, Eleanor, the hot button character.
I know, seriously. Who knew that we were going to spend 25 minutes talking about Eleanor?
Well, she's fascinating, and I do have a soft spot for her, but I also don't.
Yeah.
Simultaneously, it's very confusing.
Oh, I got that. I don't know. All right. The last email's from Matt. I'll read it. Mayday Broads. The third season of The Handmaid's Tale is a show at an impasse. While it still received good reviews, the show seems to be unable to evolve and shake up its status quo. We were at that point last season where June should have ended her time as a handmaid, but since she's the main character of a TV show, they hit the reset button, have her back at it within the first episode of the season. I hope they won't go there, but I wouldn't be surprised if June is still a handmaid next season. Like I said about an hour and a half ago, I don't know. I feel like that might not be a thing. This season, we were promised to see the resistance, and we do. 10 episodes into a 13-episode season. This season takes its sweet time getting to anything. A lot of it is retreading stuff we've already seen. Until then, we can get storylines like Serena and Fred having difficulty in their marriage. Who cares if those two are going to work things out? ? Fred's character has been running on fumes since they went off book, and this doesn't help. Hopefully his trial brings some new life to his storyline. Actually, I am looking forward to a Fred Waterford trial, right?
Yeah, me too.
I think that could be, hopefully, you know, on par slash better than a Celeste in Big Little Lies trial. I will say the acting remains superb. Elizabeth Moss continues to be stellar, even though I have a lot of problems with the material this season, and Dowd, while given a terrible backstory involving going dark side because a guy rejected her, deserves some better material. Yvonne Strahovski continues to do good work, even though the writers confused inconsistent and conflicted and forgot Eden's season two plot ever happened. Lighter note, what happened to Alexis Bledel? I really liked all of the Canada stuff this season, but then Emily disappears for almost the entire second half of the season. Also, how do you hire Chris Bologna and Elizabeth Reaser and give them nothing to do? Who is Elizabeth Reaser? Oh, I know her.
She's the wife.
She does. You're right. She does. They had things to do.
Seriously. Yeah. The whole scene where he gets murdered?
Yeah. And, you know, she had six kids to raise. That's a lot.
Just
yeah.
You will pray for his speedy recovery. I will.
Faster than you'll pray for Eleanor's speedy mental recovery.
That's why you get those kind of actors, because they can do that subtle and they can breathe so much into so little text and lift it off the page, which is why the writers write so little text.
Truth.
Anyway.
The Natalie of Matthew storyline may be the worst thing the show has ever done. I know the show has gotten criticism for not delving into the racial elements of Gilead's oppression. Natalie could have been a way of exploring that, but instead, all she does is act like a smug asshole until June gets her killed, her death teaching June a lesson. And what the hell was with June getting the other handmaids to recreate Mean Girls to Natalie leading up to her getting shot? Awful.
I think that's, though, why they cast her the way they did.
Really?
To be honest, because I think that does play on a lot of themes that we see all the time out in the world. That sort of really...
that's a good point.
Subtle use of sort of spitting subtle systemic racism back in your face. That is how I took that. I think that was probably a very long discussion with the casting people. And I think it was probably intentional that she was a woman of color. And I think they were exploring race by doing that personally.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. I didn't even think about that. Probably the biggest issue is June's immunity from the many brutalities of Gilead. Of course, as the lead, she's going to have a bit of plot armor. Hey!
There it is again.
There it is again. Man, this is the thing, huh?
Is that the episode title, Plot Armor?
Yeah.
No, it's going to be Mayday Bitches Part 2. I don't know. Yeah. Or Plot Armor.
Mayday whatever. Bitches again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mayday Plot Armor. Yeah, Mayday. Okay, now I'm going to write
Mayday
that
down. Bitches, but also Plot Armor.
Of course, as the lead, she's going to have a bit of plot armor, but they stretch that suspension of disbelief beyond its breaking point. How many times is June going to run away without consequences? How can June and Serena have a very loud argument in a public place with an earshot of hundreds of people with no fallout?
I'm totally fine just accepting that nobody heard that.
Yeah, I was okay with that.
It looks pretty empty to me.
It was still more populated than a Trump inauguration. I'm just saying. June literally gets away with murder. Not that I want to see June get tortured, but the rules of Gilead dictate brutal punishments to those who don't fall in line. Every time she seems to skate by, but for no reason, it lowers the stakes. Yeah, she got shot at the end of the season. But do you think she's going to die anytime soon? Question mark? So yeah, I had a lot of problems with this season. I still hope it can learn from the mistakes of this season and not just be something people can watch so they can pat themselves on the back for getting it. We know things are bad. Handmaid's Tale needs to move on to the next step already. Matt. Wow. I could not disagree with a lot of that more.
I know. Sorry, Matt, but I super disagree with a lot of that.
I think we're on the next step. Because there's going back for the Handmaids and the Marthas at this point. And, like, there's no way that they can write in everybody goes on the wall except for June. Like, there's just no way. And we've seen, there's, what, 60 fucking 100 kids? They all had Marthas that accompanied them. They're not going to put them all on the wall. They're not going to do all the Handmaids. I mean, they could do all that, but, like, that would be pretty major. I don't know. I think we're on the next step. That's just my feels. Yeah.
Well, and to speak more to Matt's complaint about the inconsistency of the season and maybe the slow build to getting to the rebellion, as it were, that's just realistic. That's life. I think television, we're so we've gotten so accustomed to action happening quickly and going 0 to 60, and we consider that good storytelling. But it's not realistic and it's not real. And I think it was very bold of this show to take a slower pace and show that change is incremental, and for every step forward you go 2 steps back. Before, and they're very rarely, and there's a lot of failure, and very rarely do you have one big payoff. So I applauded the season for going real with it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, me too. We would love to hear what everybody else has to say about this. I have so many thoughts, but I think we have definitely overstayed our welcome currently. If you would like, I would glad to discuss this in a feedback section at any point with anybody. So if you would like to do that, you can email us, thebroadcasters3@gmail.com. You can give us a call, 331-276-2373. You know how to reach us. We're on the Facebook group. We have an Instagram. We have our, you know, broadcast page. All this is in the show notes. If you want to listen to us on anything, you can listen to that in the show notes. We would love to talk about this further with you guys. Clearly, you know, we all see this a little bit differently. And by that, I mean it's 2 against 1. JK, JK. Yeah. Hashtag Team Eleanor.
Just this one thing.
Yeah, just that one thing. No, but I would love...
We're just on different spots in that circle, remember?
Yeah, yeah. That's right. That's it all comes around. About,
yeah.
You know that circle, Shandy, that reference, you know that is from episode 4 of the broadcast, right? I'm not even kidding. That is... That same circle is episode 4. So if you want to help us, you want to place yourself on the circle, like, you know, old school... All the things I just said, broadcasters3@gmail.com. We would love to talk about this more. Please, you know, hit us up. We will talk to you soon. Shop in the Amazon link. Thank you to the patrons. You want to become a patron, patreon.com/JayandJack. Thank you to the patrons that contribute to a certain level. That would be Maggie the Magnificent, Joanne with a Plan, The Drake, Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Rickner, and Ed the Creepy Mailman. Thank you guys so much. We'll talk to you next week. On that note, my name is Colleen.
My name is Amanda.
And I'm Shandy.
Peace out, everybody. May the Lord open. Mayday, bitches. All right, on the count of three.
Godspeed.
Yeah. On the count of three, mayday, bitches. 1, 2, 3. Mayday, bitches. Bye, everyone.